It's Western Oilfield Supply versus Washington State Department of Labor and Industries.
May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Jacob White, and I represent the appellant, Rain for Rent. I appreciate you guys admitting me pro hoc vice to argue before this court. My client has spent thousands of dollars to contest a $350 fine, because if this court upholds the board's decision, it will effectively create a requirement that every piece of machinery on every construction work site in the state of Washington must be accompanied by a user's manual. Now, that may sound hyperbolic, and I admit that, but what the department is essentially arguing is that one line, 60 pages into an 80-page manual, is enough to make this manual a feasible means of abating a hazard on a fusion machine. Given Mr. Landex, the employee that was injured, given the amount of training that he'd received on fusion machines, if that one line makes the absence of this manual a feasible means of abating the hazard, then every employer is going to start looking at their manuals and attach them to their machinery just to protect themselves from this possible liability.
How about attached or ensure that the employee reads the manual?
Well, Your Honor, this is the problem with the department's attempt to make this new rule. They didn't specify that the how often the manual would have to be reviewed. Do we have to verify that it's reviewed? How do we test understanding them, especially on manuals of this size? I mean, this is an 80-page manual. I would ask the court to take judicial notice. I got on Google and looked up Ryobi miter saw manuals, and they're 30 pages long, and they're different for a 10-inch miter saw and for a 12-inch miter saw.
So it just seems like the proposition advanced by the industrial appeals judge that when you do have a manual that says, don't stick your hand in between the jaws to clean out chips without turning off the hydraulics, would be a feasible means of communicating to an employee, this is important, you got to do that. And so why is it impractical? Even if it isn't, you got to have it right with the machine in every case. But if they have all kinds of training programs where you say, you got to read this, you got to read that, why wouldn't this be logical? Read this manual before you start.
Well,
put your hand in there.
I apologize for interrupting. I've got two rebuttals to that. Yeah. One, Your Honor, the department's expert here even testified that he didn't know if the manual was a feasible means of abating the hazard. In fact, what Rain for Rent has decided to do is to quit using the 36-inch jaws, because that even attaching the manual didn't abate the fact that someone was going to have to reach in there. And what they've done is they use 48-inch machines.
Once you start down the road, though, of what remedial steps were taken, then we're getting into they changed the JSA to turn off the hydraulics. There were other changes made in remedial in nature, which I understood at the hearing was argued. You can't look at remedial steps, too.
Well, I think my point, Your Honor, is that we don't know if the manual actually would have abated this hazard. We don't know, and there's nothing in the record showing that the manual actually would have isolated the hazardous energy here. The second point, Your Honor, is that the question about whether or not the manual is a feasible means of abatement, the first thing that has to be established is what had the employer already done to abate that hazard. So if the manual says, don't stick your hand in here to remove shavings, the baseline is what had Rain for Rent already done to inform Mr. Landek about the pinch point hazard. And here, there's copious amounts of evidence in the record and not much evidence to the contrary that he'd already been trained on the pinch point hazard.
Although the specific statements are, be careful where your hand placement is. It isn't, be sure to turn off the hydraulics before you stick your hand in there, which it now does say.
Well, Your Honor, in fact, the department, Rain for Rent created a draft standard operating procedure, right? That has actually not been enacted. Mm. So that's actually not what Rain for Rent's decision has been about abating the hazard. The department's expert testified that the hazard here is the pinch point. So like with the miter saw, the question that we have to focus on is, what is the hazard here? You know, the hazard is, for a miter saw, it's cutting. The hazard for the fusion machine is the pinch point, and there's a heat hazard, too, from the heater plate. The JSAs indicate that Mr. Landeck understood the hazard and understood how to abate it. And JSAs are the clearest evidence that he understood the hazard, and those JSAs are proximate in time with the project. They show that when he began the project, he was thinking about the hazards associated with it, and the board made reversible error when it mistakenly decided that those JSAs were signed after the accident. So that's the clearest evidence that he had been trained on this hazard, and the board ignored it. Now, you take that clear evidence in the JSAs that he understood the pinch point hazard and he understood how to avoid it, and then if you disregard that, that colors the board's understanding of all the rest of the evidence about Mr. Landeck's training. The record does show that he had 4 weeks of on-the-job training with the manufacturer.
Doesn't say when.
It doesn't say when, right? Admittedly, the record's imperfect.
And he's testified that he's only been trained on manual, not hydraulic systems.
Actually, Your Honor, he did testify that he had been trained on hydraulic pipe fusion machines. That's page 253 of the record. So the board actually got that incorrect in their finding. So now, but I take the point that if the board didn't know when all this training had occurred and they had questions about what the quality of that training was, if you thought that the JSAs had occurred after the accident, then you might think he had all this training 6 years ago or whenever it was, and then he started doing this project and he didn't understand it. Coupled with the fact that he did ask for the manual, I can see where the board might be their decision. But once you understand that the JSAs were filled out proximate in time with the project and that shows that he did understand the hazard, then you start understanding that, okay, all that training he'd had prior was effective and that it was cumulative and that he did understand this hazard. And so to uphold the board's finding that additional training is a feasible means of abatement would mean asking Rainforrent to do something else above and beyond the manufacturer's training, the training they gave him on the job, and these JSAs and the lockout tagout training that we have in the record that he at least attended a lockout tagout training within, I believe it was November 2012, so within a year prior to the accident. The last point I'll make before I cede my time is that the initial citation was a training citation, but then the department talked to Rainforrent and then amended the citation to a safe place citation. That seems clear that they thought that the training wasn't the problem and that it was the manual. And if we look at the board's decision, it's all a discussion of the manual. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Paul Crisali on behalf of the Department. Rainforrent had its employee put his hand in the jaws of the Pitbull 900 without the operator's manual or instruction to consult that manual beforehand. The manual instructs to turn the hydraulics off before removing shavings or ribbons. If he'd done so, we wouldn't have had the injury. Substantial evidence thus shows that Rainforrent had an unsafe workplace, so this Court should affirm. With all the other issues going through this case, I want to focus on three. First of all, there was a recognized hazard. Substantial evidence shows that the manual clearly describes the hazard of the machine becoming energized and then causing substantial injury or even death to an individual. The manual also states that it needs to be included. It is part of the equipment and needs to be included with it at all times. This is page five, and when you look at page 576, which is where this warning occurs, it clearly shows that the blades are sharp and can cut, to never attempt to remove shavings while the facer is on or while the facer is in the position facing the jaws, and it says that death or injury will result. There's a recognized hazard within the industry of this machine becoming energized and causing the pinch point to pinch on a limb or something like that. At that point, you have that element established. Further, since this is a general duty citation, it focuses on when the department promulgated this particular regulation, it recognized that, look, there's lots of different regulations out there that we control, but we need to have something that just ensures that conditions are safe, that employers follow common sense and take reasonably adequate measures to look out for the safety of their employees. It's common sense that if you have a sharp blade that can pinch, that can be activated by hydraulics, to try and provide training so that way your employees don't put their hands there. I think they would admit as much.
Is there an implication in this record that from the inspector's testimony that Mr. was it Landreth, Landek, offered the time pressure that he was under when he was explaining how things happened, why they happened, and then either the inspector projected or maybe there was some other conversation that the dilemma was the heat plate under the older machines would cool off, and to start it back up, you'd have to, if you turned off the hydraulics and the heat plate, you'd have to warm it back up. If that was, in fact, his frame of mind in making his decision, doesn't that suggest he understood you need to turn off the hydraulics normally?
Well, but first it shows that he wasn't, he didn't understand what this particular machine did, which then cuts against the employer's obligation to tell you what this particular machine, how you can alleviate those particular concerns. Yes, it does show that maybe he knew not to, there was the time pressure, but I think that cuts by a substantial evidence test the other way to showing the pressures that was placed on him by the employer to take shortcuts and to put his hand in the sharp point.
And the final decision here seems to acknowledge that theory.
Exactly. I would agree.
And then moves on to say, well, if he'd had the manual, he would have understood better you have a separate switch for the heater.
Yes, or training or something else out there that just says this is not the practice that we employ at our company to put your hand in the sharp place. Turning to the second point, is Rain for Rent, substantial evidence shows Rain for Rent did not reduce the hazard of the machine becoming energized while putting a hand at the pinch point. I've referenced already this general duty standard, but throughout the record you can see that they just didn't provide this manual or this training. There's been a lot of talk about the lockout tagout policy and the accident prevention program. Just because there might be compliance with the regulations of lockout, tagout, or accident prevention program does not mean that they created a safe workplace, particularly when it's undisputed within the testimony that the lockout, tagout policy did not specifically address this kind of situation. And at that point, you might have something out there that talks about energized equipment, but it's not addressing the hazards that are facing the worker as they're working with the with this particular piece of equipment.
If he understood that he should be turning off the hydraulics, doesn't that link up with the logout tagout procedure having informed him the same the manual would have informed him?
No, because if you look at page 266 and through 267, he said that he didn't understand. Mr. Landek testified he didn't understand the lockout-tagout policy to apply this particular situation. Whether it did or didn't, he didn't have the training, by substantial evidence, that that's what he should have been applying to this scenario and what he should be doing even if it did apply in this scenario. Third, substantial evidence shows that Rain for Rent failed to meet its burden to prove unpreventable employee misconduct. The analysis basically ends at the point where it did not introduce its accident prevention program. It did not introduce its lockout tagout program. We don't know what safety policies and procedures are going on at this particular company and at this particular site. And at that point, the analysis fails where we don't have anything to assess what would have been expected of Mr. Landek and what Rain for Rent required of him to address the safety concerns.
Didn't the risk manager for Rain for Rent described the lockout tagout procedure policy?
Well, a couple points on all this regarding the lockout tagout procedures. I ask the court to keep in mind what evidence is in the record versus not. The board has a strange policy or regulation where you can put evidence in what's called colloquy. That evidence is not considered by the tribunal unless there is an evidentiary objection that suddenly gets it back in. There was none in this case regarding much of the lockout tagout information. What is in there is, okay, we have the Rain for Rent safety consultant or safety person come in and describe some parts of it, but it's not entirely clear what he's describing. And then weigh that against the testimony by Mr. Landek that he didn't understand the policy to apply to this particular situation. The finder of fact can look at those two things and say, okay, this is not a policy that is clearly understood to the employee to create a safe workplace and to apply in this particular situation. Regardless of whether it does or doesn't, at the very least, it's not understood by the employee, and the employer's not doing its job in that respect.
Can I ask you to go back to the argument by opposing counsel that there's no feasible means to meaningfully mitigate this risk demonstrated especially regarding the manual?
Well, the manual could be there, and you could instruct your employees to read the manual. And they admit that there's something on a page within that manual that would apply to this particular circumstance. It has a warning label and is in pretty bold letters at that particular point of what risks you face if you don't comply with the manual. And the manual itself, we need to be specific here. The manual itself says it's part of the equipment. And the only way to operate the equipment is to have that particular manual there. The department's not asking for a wholesale rule here that you have to have a manual there at all points. It's just looking at the common sense situation here where you have this dangerous machine that has this pinch point that's well recognized, what to do when you face that hazard of the pinch point. And that's where there's been this testimony about the JSAs. I don't think those show anything except that they recognize the hazard, potential hazard of the pinch point, but they don't tell you what to do in that situation. They don't tell you, okay, keep your hands out of there, but what happens when the ribbons get stuck in there and you have to figure out a solution to make sure that you can do your job, particularly under a deadline, while doing it safely. And they don't provide that in those JSAs until later, it appears. So it again shows that it's an unsafe workplace, an unsafe work practice. Unless the court has any further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, opposing counsel states that, one, I mean, he focused on the fact that the manual says that it must be attached. The state of Washington has not delegated its rulemaking authority to the authors of manuals. The manuals are replete with warnings. And in this case, to say that that one line on page 60 of an 80-page manual, one, that Mr. Landick would have read that and understood it prior to this accident occurring, and that he would have applied, that he would have actually turned off the hydraulics before he removed the shavings. We just don't know, and this is exactly why upholding the board's decision would create for employers a fear that they have to attach manuals to everything, because if that one line is enough, then if that one line is enough to make the absence of the manual a citable offense, then every manual is going to be attached to every machine in the state of Washington. That cannot be enough. You asked, Your Honor, about this theory that Mr. Landick was in a rush, right? Now it does seem like the board accepted that theory, but when asked by the department's counsel at the hearing, Mr. Landick said, I was possibly in a rush. Mr. Landick never verified that theory. Mr. Cascella, the inspector, was the one that made the statement about how he believed that there was a rush and that that's what led to the accident. But there's nothing in the record about that. And to say that the manual somehow would have abated the hazard under that theory, honestly, it's nonsense, because there's nothing in the manual that says the hydraulic and the heater systems are not interconnected with one another.
Shows two different switches. It'd be ironic to have different switches. They don't. Doesn't that support an inference that they operate independently?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that it means that you might turn one off and you might turn off the other, but to say that that means that turning off the hydraulics means that the heater won't be affected at all, that's not clear. And Mr. Landick had been operating on this McElroy 900 Pitbull Fusion machine for 2 weeks. The 24-inch cuts that he testified to making about 70 of them on this job, they were all on the same machine. It's just different jaws. You just trade up, you know, the 24-inch for the 36-inch jaws. So Mr. Landick had been using this machine for a considerable amount of time on this job. And, you know, then this accident occurs. Then to claim that he didn't understand how the machine operated seems a little disingenuous. So the department makes much that the JSAs don't say what to do after you've identified the hazard and how to handle it. But that's why lockout-tagout training is so important. And here, lockout-tagout training would say, unplug this machine. It's connected to a generator. That would be the way to isolate the energy. Or Mr. Landick could exercise stop work authority and to talk to his supervisor about what to do, because no one had ever seen the shavings in the shroud. To say that we didn't do enough training, it makes us, we're chasing a vanishing point. All right. Thank you, Your Honor.